Hello, and welcome back to Play DNA. This is episode 47. I'm Cassandra.
I'm Damon.
And I'm Sarah.
All right, let's start by talking about the games we played this week. I know we didn't play too many. We've been busy, and Sarah's been sick.
Yeah, I've had this bad cold, so we were going to play games, and we just didn't get around to it. Sorry. I did play a game with Bo that I got him for Valentine's Day called Zerts.
Z-E-R-T-Z.
Yeah, it's got these really nice marbles. I can't tell if the marbles are made of glass or not.
They're not glass. They're heavy, though.
They feel like real glass.
I think they might be made of clay. They feel real good.
Yeah, they're amazing. It's a two-person abstract strategy game. It takes like 5 minutes to learn, and I've lost every time. We played it twice. So we'll see if I can beat him next time. I highly doubt it, though. So
cool. I like abstract strategy games. We've dove back into Napoleonics, which is the war game that has like a whole campaign. Not all of them involve Napoleon. In fact, most of them don't involve Napoleon. But I'm playing the French, Damon's playing the British, and we're in the middle of a battle right now. It's not looking good for me. But,
Oh, no.
The kind of nice thing about losing in that game, though, is that before you get into the scenario, you read up about the actual battle, and it explains what happened in the actual battle. And so I know that in real life, I lost. And so the chances of me actually winning, you know, are pretty low. And that makes you feel a little bit better about losing. Like, even in real life, with, like, good military leaders, this wasn't going to happen for them. That doesn't mean you don't try. But
the game is pretty strong in its historical aspects, so they're not fair. They're not set up to be fair. They're more even than they would be otherwise, but...
Yeah, so we'll see. I think I'm going to lose, though. But it's a good game. It's fun. It's a two-person war game. I would say as far as war games go, it's probably on the lighter side. So if you're looking to, you know, try one, it's a good one to try. But that's it. So we are going to talk today about propaganda. So last year I did an episode about games in warfare. And that one covered some things. It didn't cover any propaganda, really. So this is kind of it's a continuation of the same theme. These are games that have been used in war times as propaganda, whereas the other episode was like how games have helped people escape prison camps and some other cool stuff. Yeah, that's what we're going to talk about. So first of all, let's just really quickly talk about what propaganda is. So propaganda is the dissemination of information, facts, arguments, rumors, half-truths, or lies to influence public opinion.
So it can be the dissemination of facts?
It can be the dissemination of facts if the facts are very specifically picked out of...
So cherry-picked facts.
Yes, cherry-picked facts, definitely. But it's the management of collective attitudes by the manipulation of significant symbols. So propaganda doesn't necessarily need to be, like, 100% evil. Like, propaganda could still be based on certain facts, but they're cherry-picking facts, and they have a very specific goal in mind. They're not just trying to inform the public. They're saying, these are the facts we want you to know, and thus we want you to believe this specific thing. So propaganda is something that governments do. It's something that sometimes corporations do. There's a lot of different kinds of propaganda. But the important thing is, yeah, they have a specific goal in mind to achieve, and they deliberately select facts and arguments as a means to an end. It also tends to play very much on people's fears and emotions rather than facts, even if facts are involved. Obvious places that you might find propaganda are things like pamphlets or flyers in newspapers and newsreels if it's government propaganda. But some of the most powerful forms of propaganda look a lot more innocent. And it can be found in books, even fictional books, can be found in magazines, youth camps, and yes, even board games and video games. And board games are what we're going to talk about today. So the International Museum of World War II has many examples of how Nazi Germany worked propaganda into all parts of everyday life. There's some really interesting stuff there. It includes household furniture, Christmas ornaments, toys. They even made light bulb filaments that were in the shape of swastikas. Like, they were all in. Yeah, they like really went really far with it. And Russell Rendell, who's the guy who runs this museum, the founder of the museum, he said that the real power of evil is to make it normal. So that's one of the things that the Nazis really tried to do. And also, Nazis were very specifically focused on youth. And board games were one of the ways that they tried to get youth excited about Hitler and about the war and everything else. And so there are a lot of board game examples that are full of swastikas and caricatures of greedy Jews. There are lots of symbols of war, tons of war games that were made at the time that reflected the current struggle and reinforced this idea that the homeland needed to be protected from the evil outside forces. So there were a lot of games that would show children imagery of their heroic relatives marching off to war or rounding up Jews for the good of the country. And it's all kind of disturbing imagery if you look at it in the context of what's actually happening. But it was designed to kind of soften and patriotize, I don't know if that's a word, but to make it patriotic, to make everything that was happening seem really patriotic and important and helpful to the country. Another interesting thing that these museum curators were talking about is that you can actually see the progression of the war reflected in their board games. So at the beginning of the war, they started super patriotic and they were all about beating the Allies in the war and how powerful they were as a military. And then closer to the end of the war, they became a lot more about the dangers of air raids and double agents and the importance of protecting yourself. The quality of the board games also changed significantly as Germany ran out of resources. So at the beginning of the war, the pieces were really nice and they would be made out of metal. And then at the end of the war, they were manufacturing games almost entirely out of paper. So I thought that was super cool also. And we've talked a few times on this podcast about how board games can be used as historical documents. And all of these are a great example. Like a lot of these games have been preserved in museums and they can be looked at to help us understand the culture at the time and the history. Not to the same extent, but Allied countries also had propaganda toys that would demonize Germans and the Japanese and portray them as less than human. So this was not only Germany, for sure. So we're going to get back to World War II because there was a lot going on in World War II. But first, I want to remind you guys about the Game of the Goose. Do you guys remember the Game of the Goose?
Yes.
I talked about it a good long time ago. I did a whole episode about it. But the Game of the Goose is this really, really old kind of genre of game, which is just a roll and move. Very simple. But after the original, it just kept being mimicked over and over again, but they would do different themes. And it's literally just a track. It usually has 41 spaces, and you're trying to get to the end of the track by rolling a dice. But the theming changes, and there are thousands and thousands of different versions of this Game of the Goose. A lot of these versions were actually propaganda versions. And there was one during the Vietnam War that was an anti-American game, and it was called Bury the American Imperialists in the Boundless Oceans of the People's War. That's the name of the game. And it was just a roll and move, but favorable spaces to land on were the ones that allowed you to take down American planes or beat American soldiers or escort prisoners of war. So, like, very pro-war, very anti-American. Similar war-themed games were made from the Game of the Goose all around the world. There were also some political versions of Game of the Goose. You can even find some religious propaganda. There's marketing propaganda, like the Coca-Cola-themed game, where they were trying to sell Coca-Cola as a health drink. And so if you're playing the game and you landed on a space that had a Coca-Cola on it, you were rocketed forwards because you landed on this healthy drink. But if you landed on a unhealthy green apple, then it propelled you backwards on the game board. So that's another example of a kind of propaganda. So Now we're going to talk a little bit about playing cards, because playing cards are one of the places you can see so, so much propaganda. And playing cards have this, like, long, really rich, interesting history. And there's some great stuff here. So they've been used in so many different ways. And this one I thought was just super interesting. So in 1588, Queen Elizabeth I requested a Spanish Armada playing deck to be printed in order to let her mostly illiterate citizens know that her navy had defeated the Spanish Armada. So there was really no easy way to distribute literature at the time or to mass print anything, and most people couldn't read anyways. So, like, literally in order to tell people, hey, we won the war, she had a deck printed out that people could play with. I thought that was very, very interesting. This was not a one-off thing. Playing cards have been used many times to try and communicate to people, and sometimes it has been used as propaganda. So the rarest playing card deck in existence, there's only one copy of it, is called the 1934 National Recovery Administration Deck. And this deck was made by a group opposing President Roosevelt and his methods for economic recovery during the Great Depression. So this group just did not approve of what Roosevelt was doing. They're like, what is he doing? This is stupid, and he's an idiot, and none of this is going to work. And so they created this deck that showed him and other members of his administration and his wife in kind of these really unflattering caricatures. And Roosevelt saw these and was very upset, and he ordered the Secret Service to stop the deck's production. He didn't want them getting out. And so the Secret Service showed up to the shop that they were being printed at and watched the employees as they shoveled the decks into a furnace. And
oh, no.
Yeah, a single employee grabbed a deck and put it in his pocket, and they didn't search him, and he went home. And it just, like, was unknown for a really long time. And then he ended up selling it to somebody, and that person ended up selling it to somebody else. And finally, it ended up in this collection, this private collection of playing cards that this gentleman has, who is obsessed with really unique decks like this. So that this is the only one that exists of this tiny little propaganda deck that really didn't get much playtime because most of them were destroyed. And then, clearly, even though Roosevelt was not a fan of this deck, he remembered this incident because 10 years later, in 1940, Roosevelt believed that America's participation in World War II was inevitable, like it was going to happen. And because of that, he wanted to improve relations with Central and South America. And so he just wanted to make sure that if it came down to it, if Central and South America decided to get involved in the war, they would choose the Allies rather than the Axis. And so at the beginning, they started broadcasting Spanish language radio news, and they thought that was a good idea, but also radios were a bit of a luxury at the time. And so they didn't think they were really getting the word out. But also, just like Queen Elizabeth I found, literacy rates were very low. And it didn't really work to put out pamphlets or pieces of literature or anything else. And so later on, when America had finally joined the war, and Roosevelt was really nervous about Axis powers gaining influence in South America, he decided to commission a playing card deck that would include political cartoons that showed Hitler and other Axis leaders in really ridiculous and laughable caricatures. So people thought this was a great idea, and they hired Mexico's most famous cartoonist. His name was Antonio Arias Barnal, who was well known at the time, and his work was already seen pretty frequently in magazines and on posters. Like, posters was one of the things that people saw pretty frequently. And so they hired him. He worked on it for a really long time, made some really cool artwork. And finally, they were ready. Like, who knows how it took them some time. They were, like, really particular about this card deck. Finally, all the art was done. They were ready to publish it at the beginning of 1945. Which was way too late, because within 18 days of each other, Roosevelt, Mussolini, and Hitler all died, and the war ended. Like, very soon after that. So
do they like still print the cards or no?
Well, so Bernal, who's the cartoonist, he was like understandably a little upset. He's like, I have been working on this thing for so long. And so what he did was he printed the deck as posters, like big posters, and sent them to museums all over the world. But the world was just like, they were really tired of Hitler and Mussolini and all those people. They're like, I had no thank you. Like, we really don't want to look at these anymore.
This is horrible for him.
I know. And so the art was forgotten. Decks did get printed in apparently 2002. And the deck is called In Der Fur's Face Deck. That's the name of the deck. And there was a limited print in 2002. So there are some copies available now. And not only that, you can see the artwork now. So if you look it up online, all of the artwork is available to see. So finally, you know, Bernal's work was seen. But this is failed propaganda because it never even got out there. But they tried. Like, the fact that they thought it would do anything, I think, is kind of fascinating.
For some reason, this reminds me of that Seinfeld episode where Elaine's, like, wanting to do a cartoon for The New Yorker. And so she, like, makes that pig that goes to the complaint department. And she's like, I want to be taller. That's what she makes the pig say, but no one thinks it's funny but her. But she keeps trying to convince everyone else it is funny. It's like, it's not funny, Elaine. Like, stop trying to push this New Yorker comic.
I don't remember that one, but that sounds great. So also World War II, because a lot of things happened during World War II. And also, I think before that, we just didn't have as good of – we just don't know as much about what happened earlier than World War I, really. But in Russia had the same idea. At the same time, to make a political cartoon deck to make Hitler look ridiculous. Because they were fighting Germany on their side. And so they printed up these decks. Very, very similar idea, just like Hitler and other kind of German and Axis leaders looking silly and stupid. They printed them up and they dropped them out of bombers onto enemy lines. But this was a super half-baked plan. So for one thing, it was winter. And it was Russia, and the snow was very deep everywhere, and so many of the decks just, like, sunk into the snow and weren't seen again until spring, when you could see the decks, and they were just, like, giant piles of wet paper. So a lot of the decks just never even got to anybody. But some of them were picked up by German soldiers. But even then, it was destined to be a failure because these decks, like, they were pretty obvious, you know, propaganda. They were pretty obviously making fun of Hitler. And the decks also said on them that if a German soldier wanted to surrender, they could bring one of these decks to the Russians and they wouldn't be shot. Like, they could use them as a white flag. And because of this, the German commanders didn't want anybody deserting, obviously. And so they told their troops that if they were caught with the decks in their possession, then they would automatically be considered as a deserter and they would execute them.
Ooh.
So, like, you know, nobody did it. Nobody used them. And even the few people who looked, probably none of them deserted because it was just too high risk. For some reason, despite this failure, Russia ended up printing another deck, a very similar deck later on in the war, and doing the same thing again, dropping it onto enemy lines. And we don't know exactly how successful those were, but, you know, they tried again, and power to them for trying over and over again. There are a couple other really interesting propaganda decks. There are some that I found that were anti-religion, also in Russia earlier. Communists were really trying to stop religions from forming or religions from catching on. And there was a deck that was created where each of the suits was a different religion. And on each of these suits, there were pictures of, so for example, there was a picture of a nun who was looking pious, but then over her shoulder, she's clearly dreaming about being in a romantic relationship with a man. The Jewish suit had a picture of a rabbi looking, again, pious, but then behind him, he's got his hand up and somebody is tossing coins into it. So that one was designed to show, like, even if you believe these religions are pious and good, you know, they're hypocrites. And so that was kind of another interesting one. There have been a lot of examples of propaganda all over the place. I thought these were the most interesting stories, even though most of the time they did not actually do super well or succeed.
Propaganda is like losing the war, not winning the war.
Yeah, exactly. I still think it's interesting that they thought it had enough power at all, like, to use it. And this is still something that you see, not as much with board games now, but you certainly see it in video games. People do create video games to get people to believe all sorts of things. And some of it is less obvious and some of it is more obvious. There's definitely propaganda for, like, our military. There's propaganda for groups like PETA, for example.
Is it less obvious?
PETA is not, is might be the super most, obvious. It's the
least subtle thing I've ever seen. Yeah.
No, a lot of it is extremely, extremely obvious. And another important thing to remember about propaganda is that even if you believe a certain thing, like, for example, with PETA, like, I'm a vegetarian. I think it's great to not eat animals. I'm totally for not eating animals. But, like, PETA will make videos that say that being a vegan will make you better at having sex. And it's like,
oh my gosh,
I'm sorry, that's just not true. Like, that's just straight up not true. And this video is ridiculous. And, you know, it's the same thing. Like, a lot of political ads are propaganda. Like, they're just, like, blatantly, obviously saying not true things or saying things that are supposed to be, you know, inflammatory, just like to make you angry. And there's a lot of interesting stuff. This is kind of unrelated, but the FBI actually has some video games on their website that are not propaganda. They're actually designed to fight against propaganda. They're video games that are supposed to teach you how, like, hate groups and other kinds of conspiracy groups get you in, like, bring you in, and how you can kind of spot when things are being said to you that are not true, or, you know, if you're being lulled into a situation that's dangerous for you or not safe. And it's like the worst video game I've ever played. Damon watched me play a little bit of it. You're playing this little goat and you're running around these, like, bushes and other obstacles. But then every time you clear an area, it gives you one sentence about how to avoid being brought into hate groups. So the game itself has nothing to do with the information they're trying to give you. And I was like, why is it a goat? And I think Damon figured it out. He said it's probably because they're talking about, like, scapegoating and how you need to be careful about, you know, hate groups scapegoating people. And anyway, it was hilarious.
Wasn't there a TV show very similar to that where, like, they were trying to convince, like, these 10 contestants that, like, one of them, they didn't tell the contestants this, but Bo was watching it, and they said, by the end of the show, we're going to convince one person to push another person off the roof and, like, to see if they could actually do that. And they actually got the guy to almost push the guy off the roof, and they're like, this is a joke. You're not really going to do this. And he was like, wow, the things that they convinced me to do within, like, the 2 months I was on this TV show, just crazy. And he probably would have murdered someone.
That's horrible. That doesn't sound moral.
It wasn't. But I don't know. They convinced him to do it. They brainwashed a lot of people on that show. I can't remember the name of it, though.
Oh, Jesus. Sounds just cruel enough to be a Japanese show. Little bit too cruel to be an American show, but we're definitely getting there.
I think you need to watch more reality TV.
Yeah. Well, reality TV is mostly not real, though. You know, everybody's reading off of a script or just being directed in a certain way. Sorry if that ruins reality TV for anybody, but I think you all suspected just a little bit. Anyway, that's what I have to say about propaganda. Again, if you're interested in how games have been used in wartime, I would suggest taking a listen to the other war episode. It's pretty interesting. And Also, let me know if you've seen some interesting propaganda. Even like modern propaganda would be really cool to see. Like modern board game propaganda. I would love to see that. Anyway, I will have a little more information in the podcast notes below. You can also go to our website, which is playdnapodcast.com, to see some pictures of some of these propaganda decks and games. And until next week, play safe. Play often, and we'll see you next time.